Welcome to Late Talker Radio, the podcast that helps you navigate the early years when faced with your child having language delay. Packed with everything you need to feel empowered and positive about the future. Here's your host, consultant speech and language therapist of 20 years, Joanne Jones.
Hello and a big warm welcome to my podcast, Late Talker Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Today I'm talking all about playrooms or play areas or your child's toy box. Why, you might ask, why is this relevant? This is about late talkers, and why would it be relevant to be talking about their toys and their playroom? So, how play develops is very specific in children. And when you know that and you see what toys are related to the stage of development your child's at, you can make better choices. Also, you know, there's so much on the market these days, so much choice, so many toys, that often children end up with lots and lots of toys, more than we would have ever had when we were young, and it's getting more and more all of the time. Children are advertised to, parents, grandparents, godparents, friends and family all love buying toys for your children. And so it's very difficult, especially if you've got a few children or a couple of children, to keep in control of the amount of toys and things in your house. I've got four children and I know that it's an endless battle of kind of trying to keep things under control, and we could quite easily fill two rooms full of toys if we let that happen. So having lots and lots of toys, having lots of little bits and lots of plastic and lots of things that have been given and accumulated, all those bits of things that come in party bags or, given away free, are magazines and in restaurants, really do start to kind of build up and really have got no purpose. And so what I want to talk to you today is about, by having high quality, and by that I don't mean expensive at all. In fact, sometimes the free stuff and the things that are available around the house are the better things. But it's about understanding where your child's up to and how toys can help them to move to the next level. I want to just give you the analogy of your wardrobe. So if you went to your wardrobe and it was full and chocker with clothes, everything was tightly packed, the stuff shoved in the bottom, things have fallen off and you've not had time to pick them up, and you know your wardrobe is full to bursting, it's quite likely when you go in to get dressed that you feel very quickly overwhelmed, unimpressed, and maybe just grab the same couple of things every time you go in there. And now think of a beautiful, well-spaced, organised wardrobe full of just the things that you want to wear, just the things that go together, just the things that light you up and make you feel good. It will be a much different experience getting dressed. And so that analogy can be easily linked to your children and their toy cupboard. So not only is it important to get it right for their development and for their play development, but also for their concentration, for their organisation, and for their feelings of interest and sticking with activities. So we know that for us, having an organised environment, and it will help us to be more organised in our mind, and the same goes for your children too. So play develops in a very structured way, and that links very closely to how language develops. And by understanding that, you're in a much better position to be able to understand which toys are right for your child at any time. Now, if you've been working with me, if you're over in my group, my free group is Parenting Children with Speech, Language and Communication. My VIP tribe, the Powerful Parent Tribe, is my membership group. You'll know and understand that your child develops language, and I put them into groups to understand this. So groups 1 to 5, and we talk a lot about play and how play develops within those groups. Now, I haven't got time to go into a lot of detail here on the podcast, and I don't want to overwhelm you without the other background information that I share with parents, But what we know is that very early on, children are very exploratory in their play. They are much more interested in people initially. They then become interested in objects. They begin to use toys and objects in a way that's relational. So they might see a cup and start to feed from it. They recognize a bottle, goes in the baby's mouth. They pick up a comb and try and brush your hair. So they begin to realize that those objects have got functions. And then they get much more sophisticated in the way they use objects. Their interest grows to include wider objects. They begin to sequence together. So imagine a child washing the baby's face, drying it, putting it in bed and covering it up. That's a sequence of things with the same object. And so those tie in with children's language development. And as you can see, as it builds up in sequencing, so it builds up as their language is building up at the same time, and they're becoming phrase and then sentence users. As they begin to use these sequences of play, the play becomes less about what's in their immediate environment. So at first, you know, they become interested in small worlds, smaller toys, and it might be kind of construction vehicles that they've seen out and about on walks, but they're not part of their everyday. And then the next phase is where it becomes much more imaginative. So it might not be anything that they've ever seen. They imaginatively put things, little play sequences together. And then as they get older, the toys get less important, and it's much more about acting out and talking things through. And so at each of these different levels, children need different levels of toys. So for example, a child who's very much about exploring is not yet ready for small world play, a doll's house or doll's furniture. They might approach those toys in an exploratory way. So they might pick them up and throw them, or they might turn them around and look at them, or they might bang them against the radiator to see how they make a noise. But they're not yet playing in the way that those toys are designed for. Now, one of the phases that children go through is a cause and effect phase, and these are our group two children. And these children are beginning to realise that they have an impact on the environment around them. So they can make noise with their bodies, they can bang things, they can press buttons and something will happen. Think of a jack in a box, you press it and it pops out. And at the same time, they're learning that their gestures and their noises have an impact on their parents, and that they're able to get what they want. So they might put their hands up and the parent picks them up. I do something, you do something back. And this is a really important pivotal point for children's development. But there's also an awful lot of toys on the market that that meet this need, that are about this kind of cause and effect. You do something, something happens. You know, you press a button and a song comes on, you press a button, something pops up, you put a ball and it goes down a slide, you press a button on the remote control and the car moves. So there's lots and lots of things that cause and effect type toys, which is great, and children at this level of development really enjoy those toys. But if you've got a playroom full of all those toys doing the same thing, it's maybe time to think, well, what's the relational play toys, the next level of toys, about? So at that point, you might decide to kind of begin to move things on a little bit to help your child to learn the next phase, and therefore lead to using words. So the other thing is that I did a challenge on this. So I make toys count challenge, and I talk in much more detail about this. We go through all the kind of different levels so that you can find where your child's at and really understand what level of play they're up to. We talk about schemas, which happens in that kind of group two to three category, where children are learning about their impact on the environment through schemas such as transporting. So if you ever noticed your child putting things maybe in a doll's pram and moving them around, or filling a bag, taking the bag across the room and emptying it. Another one is trajectory, where children throw, and children can become these schemas can be quite distracting. And one of the things is that sometimes they bring about play that we don't think is appropriate and we try and change. So the classic is throwing. If you've got a child who throws their toys all the time, it's likely that they're in the schema. And the thing with schemas are they're really important because they're teaching the child about the impact of themselves and of gravity and of what happens when things hit other things. So there's lots of lessons in there. And you've got to throw and do lots of throwing to kind of work your way through that schema. So what I always say to parents is come up with some throwing games, do things that are safe throwing, get some sponge balls, go outside and do throwing and just do throwing until that schema's kind of worked through and children get are less interested. And then they can move on to the next level. Now, in a previous life, I owned a preschool for 2, 3, and 4 year olds. And I learned a lot during that time about different areas of play and different ways, different materials that you can use to help children in all these areas of development. So, for example, construction is a really important area of play. And by that, I mean having blocks that children can build into different things. So at first it might be banging the blocks together, or it might be you building a tower and the child knocking it down. But then it becomes that the child has this open-ended resource to begin to explore. So having something around construction in your playroom is really helpful. And what I'd advise for that is maybe just some plain bricks some boxes or items that you've got around the house that you can put all together. I'm looking at the moment, I've got a lovely tin with some pens in, but tins and boxes and plastic cups that children can then kind of begin to build with. Messy play is really important. And if you've got a child who is stuck at that kind of exploring stage, messy play is the way you want to go, because that really helps children to get to know their senses, integrate their senses better, and not become hypersensitive, which is the problem if sensory information is getting muddled and they're finding it difficult to move through that phase. Sand and water are another great thing. And I talk a lot about having a box, like a Tupperware box, shallow, you know, the kind that you would like slide under a bed, like a plastic container with a lid on. And some days you could put a little bit of warm water in there with some plastic cups and spoons and a whisk maybe. You could put bubbles in it one day. Another day it could have some sand in it and you could keep the sand for a week and alternate it around. A home corner or toys that are representative of the home is really important. So plastic plates, cups, teapots, spoons, those kind of things. And then as children progress and get through to the next phases, having things like an ironing board, a Hoover, a mop and bucket, anything that the child sees and is familiar with around the house, dolls, a pram, pans. And again, they don't have to be expensive ones. You don't have to be buying all sets. You could use old ones, go to the charity shop, and often you find really great used and interesting objects in there that you could use for this. Puzzles is another really great area to make sure that you cover. And at first it might be that it's a puzzle that you take the piece out and the noise happens, or you put a piece in and something. I'm thinking I used to have a shape sorter that you put the shape in the top and it kind of made a woo noise as it went down. That's great for cause and effect. And then going forward, moving the child through like 2-piece puzzles, 3-piece puzzles, 4-piece, matching of different pictures, filling in boards with the right shape. All those kind of puzzles are great for developing that side of your child's learning. A maths area, which if you've got a 2-year-old, you might think, oh my goodness, Joanne, what are you talking about? What's a maths area? But if you think of all the concepts that we have for maths, it's things like things being big and small, things sinking and floating, things being heavy and light, things fitting and not fitting. So it's maths, but it's really early concepts. And so having an area that has got different objects that fit into each other, and you could have some scales and do some, you know, the balance scales. From a very early age, children like to see what impact thing that has. I actually, as part of the challenge, I've done some Pinterest boards with lots of ideas on there for you to have a look at. So if you decide to go ahead and do that challenge, it's only £10. It's really worth it. It's absolutely full of information. And in fact, when I ran it recently, when I first was developing it, people had a huge, it had a huge impact on how people use toys, and people found that their children were playing much better once they'd gone through it. Mark making areas, having paper and pens, especially from the kind of group two onwards, topics. So if it's Christmas, having a box full of Christmassy things to explore, or you might have some Christmas cards and scissors if you've got a group three child. Or anything that is of particular interest. So if they have been watching Octonauts, if that even still a thing, then having sea animals and bringing in things that your child has a particular interest about. And you only need to have one or two of each of these things available at any one time for your child, because any more than that is overwhelming. And so what I recommend is you get a huge plastic storage box, something that maybe fit in your shed or fit in your garage, or if you've not got any other space, maybe something that you're happy to have in your lounge, or but it's got a sealed lid. And in there, I would go through the children's toys. I'd have a pile for rubbish, all those bits of plastic that accumulate, all those toys that have broken, all those things that are now outgrown. And I would give those away, give them to charity shop or throw them away, depending on where they're up to. Anything that's only half there, again, I would get rid of. I would then have a look at what's left and leave one of each type of toy out. So something that's construction, something that's home corner, something that can be used in sands, something that is puzzle based, and just have a display that's very uncluttered of maybe 10 separate toys that cover those areas. And into the big plastic box, I would put everything else. And then the way you display your toys can really help your child play. So if they are in a big box, sometimes that just has to happen. That's the only way to store things. Maybe think about having smaller boxes within that. So when the child's playing, you can get the storage boxes out, and then when you want to pack everything away, they can go into the big box. I'm thinking we've got one of those IKEA lattice wooden boxes that we use as a coffee table, and the toys go in there. But within that, there's lots of smaller boxes so that when my children are playing, I can get them out, they can access them. Think about labelling the boxes that the toys are in. If you've got shelves, you might want to have baskets on the shelves that are open. That's a really nice way of displaying the toys. But think about having a picture or a symbol on the front of each one. So this is the bricks, this is the small people, this is the kitchen set. And so you can encourage children to start sorting them back, and also just keeps on top of things and keeps things tidy. So then with a big box of plastic, the plastic box that you've got, you're going to put that away. And depending on your child and how many toys you've left out, you're going to go back and visit that box once a week, once a fortnight, once a month, whatever suits you, and do a switch around. So you're going to put the things away that you've already got, and you're going to get out the next set of 10 items. And people find this a game changer because A, it's easier to tidy up. B, you've not got all the clutter. C, you've gone through all your stuff and you've only got one or two things from each level anyway. And D, it's like Christmas every couple of weeks because there's new toys and new things to interest your child. And so it really kind of sparks their imagination back and helps them to engage and play again with things that have maybe got they've got bored with. Now, some people said to me, oh, my child, like, for example, my child loves dolls. Like, she absolutely loves dolls and she wants to play with dolls all the time. So I wouldn't take all her dolls away and put those in the plastic box, but I would have different things out and available. So, for example, because she's the youngest of four, she's got an accumulation of prams from over the years, but I don't want all those prams in my house. So they'll be in the garage, and then one pram will come out and that'll go away and another one will get swapped in. It might be that she goes through a phase of dressing and undressing the dolls. So I make sure that all the clothes are there, but all the things like the feeding and the high chair and the car seat that she's got would all go away. And again, I'd swap it in. So she's always got new and different things to do with her dolls, even though we're keeping the dolls constant. I also want to encourage her to play with other things, so the dolls would be one small part and we would bring other things in. Books are another. Who has got a million books? I know we have. And again, I would strongly recommend having 10 books out at any one time. Maybe up to 20 if you've got slightly older children. But if your child developmentally is kind of groups 1 to 3, 1 to 4, I would just have a small selection. If you can display them so that your child can see them really clearly, and if they're there within the playroom, all the better. The rest I'd put in a box, and then I'd do a swapsie every week or so. And honestly, you'll find that your child's play, interest and attention will really improve. Now, if you've got a child who's in group one, I think that less is more. So I would start with less and build up through the developmental stages. So by the time your child's in group 5, they can cope with much more on display than they can in group 1. So just bear that in mind. If you'd like to know more, go to my website, www.joannejones.co.uk. Go over to the podcast and I shall put a link for the Make Toys Count challenge. There's videos in there, there's links to Pinterest boards, so you know you're gonna be able to really get to grips with it. I also have a free assessment tool, a screening tool really, so you can find out which group your child's in, and that'll make it much more beneficial for you when you go through the Make Toys Count to make sure that you're getting it right. So the message I want to leave you with today is don't underestimate the power of toys. Too much, too many is always going to impact negatively, and getting the right toys at the right time and the right amount is such a game changer for so many children. Hope you found that useful and speak to you next time. Thanks very much, guys. Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. Please look out for the next episode coming soon. And don't forget to take a look at our show notes at joannejones.co.uk. See you next time on Late Talker Radio. Bye for now.